We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
And welcome back to Overnight America. Now past midnight in St. Louis, Missouri. Aw, no longer National Radio Day. Aw, we'll have to wait another year. Maybe we'll just play the songs. Why not? Just play them all the rest of the year. Like, there's a couple in there that could make it to the song we play out of the show. You know, every radio show, I feel like most of them have this specific song they play at the end of the hour. You know, like I listen to some Coast to Coast. They're on our sister station, and they got that pan flute. You know, a little pan flute thing. They play that all the time. I thought, oh, that'd be cool. Let's have a song we can play at the very end of the show. Maybe I'll play one of these, that Sleeping with the Radio On. Get a couple of new ones in there in the rotation. Not bad. Big announcement that happened earlier today. If you didn't hear it live on KMOX Radio, I'm going to play it for you. MLS Commissioner Don Garber in town. Not that good of a secret, because a week ago, Tom Ackerman was able to bring this to KMOX and say, hey, good news, we're getting an MLS team. But it was made official earlier today.
It's hard to imagine that we were able to have a thriving professional soccer league and that it could exist in the United States and Canada without having the city of St. Louis being a part of it. Well, imagine no more, because St. Louis, with its incredibly rich soccer history, not only deserves an MLS team, but has earned one.
That's right. You better believe we earned it.
I didn't even have applause written in those comments. From the very earliest days when immigrants came to this city from the United Kingdom, from Ireland, from Italy, from throughout the world, and really brought the beautiful game to this city, to the success of St. Louis University, to the home of the Herman Award, to the dozens, and there are actually dozens of local players that are in the National Soccer Hall of Fame. St. Louis has always been and will continue to be one of the great historic soccer cities throughout the United States.
You better believe it. Well, it's very exciting for the city of St. Louis, and we're getting two back-to-back announcements, because now on Wednesday, which is technically today now that we passed midnight, the XFL is ready to announce some more details about their league, including here in St. Louis. We should have an idea of what our team name is going to be. They teased during a promotional video, some of the different options for the team names. For Major League Soccer, they haven't gotten that far yet. In fact, they're finalizing a lot of plans. It sounds like the team name and colors will be selected through what they call a formal process. MLS for the Lose says it'll engage with fans and supporters throughout the process for input. So that means there's still a chance that the Gooey Butter Cakes could be out there and dominating on the soccer field. Here's Carolyn Kendall Betts as part of her speech.
St. Louis, are we ready to do this? Well, good. I'm glad you are, because I'm not. No, just kidding.
Well, we got ourselves a jokester over here.
Thank you, Commissioner Garber. And on behalf of our families, we cannot thank you and the other MLS owners enough.
You know, that might not be the best thing to say to bring confidence to the commissioner of Major League Soccer. Are you guys ready? Because I'm not. Not today. No jokes today. St. Louis has enough problems. Could you imagine if Don Garber says, "Ooh, no confidence there. Boy, maybe we made a mistake." Of course, he's not thinking that. But still, not the day to joke around. My wife tells that to me all the time. I can't say certain things in front of the four-year-old. Not that I'm someone that curses or says things, you know, bad at the house or whatever it is. But sometimes you'll say something and you know the kid will just grab onto it, so it's better just not to say it. And she'll give me that look like, I can't believe you just said that. What if he hears that and says it about, oh, I don't know, a million times at school? So That was one of those moments where if I were there making that joke in front of the microphone, my wife would have given me that look like, what are you doing?
For believing in the city that we truly love and care so much about. So for months, I've been trying to convey the excitement that is happening right here, right now, in this room, and there are absolutely no words to accurately describe it. It was this excitement and support from the fans in this room and throughout the region that inspired the ownership group to come together to pursue this endeavor, but it also kept us motivated and focused. So with sincere gratitude, I say thank you.
Aw, that was so cool. They posted a video online, Major League Soccer posted a video, where they ran up Market Street to the arch. I thought that was such a cool video. They did this like time lapse, and it kept like cutting forward like a time lapse would. And it looked so cool, and I thought, I gotta make one of those videos sometime. I'm walking to a Cardinals game. I'll pop on the phone, do a time lapse, jog. All right, let's not get ahead of ourselves. Walk down Market Street and pull one of these. But this is the video they played to introduce St. Louis as a Major League Soccer town.
1 year ago, we were not even on the radar screen for MLS. The support in this city from all of its citizens and businesses has been fabulous.
Our goal was the same from day one. Bring MLS to America's first soccer capital.
The game of soccer brings people together in such a unique way. It is going to do just incredible things for St. Louis and downtown St. Louis.
Yeah, it will.
And be part of our region's renaissance.
It's something more than just soccer. It's about something that's transformational for downtown St. Louis.
Great things are happening here in St. Louis.
There's already been $8 billion committed to downtown.
Our fans and our corporate community stepped up, and MLS heard what was happening in St. Louis loud and clear.
We want to turn Downtown West into another great destination.
This city is on the verge of something huge.
If you look at all the different wins that we've had so far here in St. Louis just recently over the last year or so, Dan Buffas, who you've heard on the radio here, I'll bring him in when we talk about Uber or Lyft, those ride-sharing companies. He's someone that's actively doing that. And he posted a list of all the things that have happened so far. So, for example, in the last year, the Cardinals have grossed over 3 million fans. We have the NHL All-Star Game headed this way. Blues win the Stanley Cup. We hosted the PGA Championship. We didn't just host it. We blew it out of the water, man. The crowds in the anticipation and people watching Tiger Woods, and he was like, man, the crowds in St. Louis, all the golfers were just blown away by the support here in St. Louis. Got an XFL team, and the announcement's going to be coming tomorrow of what the team name is going to be. Major League Soccer expansion team, now that we have something like that. Look at what we have with the Olympic trials that'll be coming here to St. Louis. And I saw this posted. Once the Major League Soccer stadium is built, you could even see SLU put in a bid to try to get the NCAA College Cup here. Why wouldn't they push for those things? Look at, we have some international teams that come and play. We have the men's and women's over. Then we just have the men's team scheduled, or that just played. I mean, we have all kinds of different events that happen sports-wise here in St. Louis. It's pretty remarkable. If you think all of these things happen in 1 year, there is a lot of good things that have been coming to St. Louis. There's people that are trying really, really, really hard, really hard. And there are some great success stories to add to that. There's a couple of interviews I want to play for you. Tom Ackerman was out at the announcement. Jim Cavanaugh had some great things to say about it. Andy Taylor as well. We're going to play those coming up next on Overnight America KMOX. Welcome back to Overnight America. All right, so Tom Ackerman had some really good interviews earlier today. He was at the Major League Soccer announcement. Michael Calhoun was there. A lot of people were there. And if you watched the video online, or maybe you listened to it live here on KMOX, you saw there was a lot of excitement, as there should be. We were announced first, and there's a reason for that. We put together the strongest proposal, and St. Louis was the best opportunity for Major League Soccer. So they picked us. We weren't a pity pick. They picked us. We did a good job. Pat yourself on the back, St. Louis. You did a great job. So Tom Ackerman was there, and he had a chance to talk to some of the different people involved. And we look at some of the investors, including Jim Cavanaugh, very excited. Here's part of that interview.
Well, Jim Cavanaugh, you've done it. The work, and that was hard work, and you've been involved in this for a long time. What does it feel like now?
You know, it's just very rewarding. I wouldn't even say it's, you know, it's a relief because the work has just begun, but incredibly rewarding to see the support that we've received from the community and the number of people that were here today, the fans, and, you know, just the energy and, you know, the leaders, corporate leaders, civic leaders, political leaders, professional athletes, and just so many great people that are behind this effort and appreciative of it. Just makes it all worthwhile. So I'm incredibly energized about what this is going to do for our community.
Why is MLS growing like it is, and what could it be like here?
You know.
Oh, I pressed the wrong button. I'm sorry. Well, Jim Cavanaugh was talking to Tom Ackerman, and I thought those were some pretty good questions. You know, sometimes I'll do that. It's National Radio Day. Do I get a pass? Do I get a little bit of a, oh, it's okay, Ryan. You can mess up every once in a while. I pressed the wrong button. I'm sorry. How about we'll do this one instead? Tom Ackerman actually had a chance to talk to Andy Taylor as well.
Here with Andy Taylor, you are now an MLS owner.
Yes, sir. And like Carolyn said up on the stage, it's kind of hard to believe after this short in terms of time, but very hard road to get here. And we so appreciate the support from the fans and the sponsors here in town.
How proud are you of everybody involved, first and foremost, the people that spent so much time from the very beginning to make this happen?
We are just grateful for the fact that we had people in front of us that did this before, a couple years ago, that helped us. And we have had, this has been a great thing for my family. It's drawn our family closer together, if you really want to know the truth. And they are behind it 110%.
You have a terrific family, and you have so many people involved. You also have the first majority female-owned team in league history. What does that mean to you?
Well, that means, first of all, that I'm the youngest male in the family, which is the truth. I'm surrounded. But that's a very, very good thing. And they are very excited. Carolyn, Chrissy are great businesswomen. And, you know, the others are going to contribute. It's going to be really fun to watch this.
You've made a significant commitment here. You've made a significant investment. Why do you believe so much in the city of St. Louis?
My father started his business here 62 years ago. The city of St. Louis embraced him. This is a place to grow the business. We have so much history here, and we are privileged to have a large company now today. What else should we be doing with some of the profits and proceeds of our business for over 62 years but to help the city be as best as it possibly can be?
Oh, yeah.
Downtown West, the vision of that stadium and those fans, what do you envision? What do you see?
Oh, I think if you look what's going on at Union Station, then you're going to the soccer venue. There's some plans that the soccer venue will be a year-round, have some year-round features to it. I think that it will draw some other businesses. I'm very excited. I think it could be another great attraction for St. Louis.
The work begins now. What do we do tomorrow?
Well, as it was mentioned on the stage, we got a few more things to do to cinch the property, get that tied up. We want to get started. We're drawing already, but we want to get started working on the stadium either last quarter of this year or the first quarter of next year. We want to be ready to play in 2022.
Oh, that's so awesome. So that was Andy Taylor with Tom Ackerman. He had another interview with Taylor Twellman. Maybe we'll play that in a moment. But reinvesting in St. Louis. So let's say you're a big company like Enterprise and you have your headquarters here and you have other opportunities for you to invest. And obviously, they're a national known brand. They're all over the place. I mean, every airport, every city basically has an Enterprise, at least a drop off pickup. And they're just known. And, you know, they have that reputation around them. But here in St. Louis, they said, this is where we want to reinvest in order to make more money. Isn't that what you want to happen with these large corporations? You want to be able to have them invest their businesses, build out their businesses, and that way help build the economy locally here in St. Louis and try to retain as much money as possible. Coming up in a few minutes, I'm going to talk to Dr. Chris Copeland. He's with Tarleton State University. There's been a lot of ransomware attacks that have been happening lately. But off the air, I was talking to him about, just generally speaking, how the city of St. Louis has done an excellent job when it comes to trying to train a workforce in tech fields. I mean, we got a great tech sector in downtown St. Louis. They're finding ways to try to attract more tech companies. In order to do that, they want to make sure there is a base of local trained, highly trained, highly skilled tech workers. In order to do that, you have to train them. So there's all kinds of great organizations that are training people for the tech companies that they want to attract here. And it's a good win. You know, you're able to retain local talent. And I was telling that to Chris Copeland, and he says, I know, St. Louis has that reputation. I was shocked. I was like, wow, you're in the tech industry. You're down in Fort Worth, Texas. You're a teacher. And he says that they've tried to recruit him to come up and work in the tech company out here. This has become a big tech hub. They have been attracting a lot of people into St. Louis. That's a great strategy. So all of these things, they play a part in the growth of the city. For all the things that we have that we still have to deal with, we got a lot on our plate, man. We got a lot of things that we got to deal with. This is by no means are we going to look at this and say, okay, we're set. No. We got a lot of issues. But it's good to see we get a couple of wins now and again. And these are really big wins, really big wins. Here's Tom Ackerman a little bit more earlier today with the MLS announcement.
Taylor Twellman, as a fellow native St. Louisan, I was so happy for you being happy. Just seeing you up there, what was it like, first of all, stepping onto that stage today?
A little weird, a little surreal, almost as if I died and went to heaven. The Blues won the Stanley Cup, something I thought I would never see in my lifetime. And then here we are in August, literally having a conversation about St. Louis and soccer coming back to this city. It's always been in this city, but now for the number one league in the United States to bring a franchise here, it's something I'll tell my grandkids about. And I've had nephews here and some nieces here, and today was fun.
You put so much energy into this from the beginning, from the first look that they had at MLS. You wanted it here. There were so many people from the very beginning that put a lot of energy into it, didn't they? Kind of lay the framework here.
Yeah, but listen, St. Louis sells itself, especially in this sport. Now, granted, St. Louis has had a few bumps in the road regarding sports in the past, but this sport is in the fabric of the city. It's in the heart and soul of this city. So St. Louis didn't really need to sell itself as a soccer city. What it needs to sell itself, as being progressive, as being younger, as being diverse. This sport's going to help it, but the Taylor family is going to really help it with the stadium and the project they build. When was the last time we said young people in the county are going to want to go to downtown St. Louis? Guess what? They're going to want to now.
Yeah, exactly. I don't think people realize how effective that can be with the young audience coming in. What have you seen?
Oh, it's huge. It's absolutely huge. You can find some of those interviews online, too, at KMOX.com, part of our coverage where St. Louis is welcoming the next Major League Soccer franchise right here to town. It begins in 2022, and there's going to be a lot of anticipation for that. Do you know what a ransomware attack is? It's something that you could fall prey to, but a lot of big businesses are worried about this. There's cities in towns that are worried about this. It's such a big disruption into the business that they do. I wanted to talk to Dr. Chris Copeland from Tarleton State University on ransomware attacks coming up next on Overnight America KMOX. And joining us now is the director, the Institute for Homeland Security, Cybercrime, and International Criminal Justice Studies. That's in Fort Worth, Texas. Chris Copeland, Dr. Chris Copeland, thank you so much for coming on to KMOX.
Thank you for having me.
So that's at Tarleton State University?
Yes, sir.
How's life in Texas treating you?
It's hot.
Yes, it is hot.
It's very, very hot. Life in Texas is good.
So why is Texas being targeted for all these ransomware attacks?
So it's not that Texas, per se, is targeted. There's been recent attacks both in Florida and, I believe, New York. So it's more a matter of that there are quite a number of cities in Texas. There's at least 2,400 to 2,500 municipalities in Texas. Mm-hmm. And that means there's a lot of opportunity for what's called net widening. Mm-hmm. net widening is you cast a larger net for opportunities for victimization and for fraud than you do in a state that might have fewer cities. And Texas has a large number of cities, therefore a large number of opportunities to commit fraud.
Yeah, so let's first back up, and when we talk about ransomware, maybe you can define that so people can understand what kind of these cyber attacks that some cities have been under.
That's a great question. Ransomware is a malware, so a malicious software, malware for short, that holds the computer and its data ransom until a fee or a payment is made to unlock the computer. Mm-hmm. And this is usually either done with a code that is emailed to the victim, or it is unlocked remotely through command and control software.
Yeah,
but it literally holds the computer. You cannot log into it. You cannot access the information on it. It holds it for ransom until a payment is made.
It's a pretty scary moment. You probably have seen instances where it's not just like cities or government agencies, but a lot of times businesses will get hit this way too. These people are, and hackers or whatever, are targeting what they think are people that would fall prey to just paying the ransom. And these attacks seem fairly common. They happen not frequently, but they're not uncommon.
So they started to first become more and more common around 2012. Early 2013 is when ransomware really came on the scene as an option. And the issue here is the people who hold these computers ransom don't really care whether or not they think the victim can pay or not. Mm. It's, again, that net widening. You want to throw that net out as far and wide as possible. And if you catch three or four people who can pay, then you're successful, regardless of the hundreds of people who can't, or even thousands of businesses who can't.
Yeah.
They're just going to start over.
And you're trusting that if you do end up paying the ransom, that the people are going to be honest about it and actually give you the code or unlock those files that they've locked up. And I don't know what the success rate is. I don't even know if you should pay these people. What should you do if something like this happens?
Well, so that's a judgment call. And you're absolutely right. There is no, to the first statement, there is no guarantee that there is going to be an unlock of these systems once the ransom is paid. This is quite easily, it could be a scam, right?
Yeah.
So they don't really care. There might not be an unlock code. And there's no guarantee that it will be removed from your computer once the ransom is paid. So, that's the downside. The upside is, how critical is your data? And that is a judgment call that only the people who are in, a person or a business or even a state agency or government organization has to make that call. But I would say that people who have not already started to plan for what's called business operations planning or continuity of operations, If those plans don't include a ransomware attack now, then they're sorely out of date. They need to beef up on their continuous of operations planning in terms of making sure that ransomware is part of that planning so that you can recover from one more quickly and with less expense.
Yeah. I know the company I worked for didn't really have an IT professional per se. They had people that worked in IT, but one of the stations I worked at actually got hit with one of these. And I would say that they didn't pay, and a lot of the files were lost until they, eventually they caught on that something was up. They hit this kill switch type of deal to cut the internet off, and then at that point, it was too late for the stuff that was already infected. So eventually, the company got a real IT professional, started finding ways to safeguard themselves against things like that, including regular backups. They weren't doing any backups of any of their data. So how can some of these companies that are afraid that they may be the target one day actually help themselves to combat this?
So I would first say that it's not a matter of if someone becomes a target, it's a matter of when. Remember that these types of malwares are released upon the internet in mass, right? So there are malwares right now floating around there who are not targeted, who are just sitting there waiting to be executed and to encrypt your data. In terms of what businesses, people, and organizations can do, the first thing is make sure you have a backup.
Mm-hmm.
And not just a backup of things that are going to be, you know, critical, things that are going to keep your operation running. So that's the first and foremost. And make sure that those backups are handled and scheduled on a consistent basis, whatever that consistency is. Yeah. You know, for me, backups happen every night. I do incremental backups every night and then a full backup once a week. Mm-hmm. So if, you know, if I get hit with a ransomware attack, which I have been hit with a ransomware attack, I just fall back to last night.
Yeah.
Right. So I lose some things, but I don't lose everything.
Right.
The second thing is utilize the cloud. You know, you have a lot of options now in terms of storing your data on a cloud, in terms of handling your data on cloud. You have a number of vendors, Microsoft, IBM, Amazon, just to name a few. The third thing is make sure you have antivirus running. You know, make sure that your malware protections are running and, more importantly, up to date. Mm-hmm. Lots of businesses purchase McAfee or they purchase Trend Micro or Norton, but they don't pay for the updates. You know, and these things change daily. There will be a new version of this malware out tomorrow,
yeah,
or even the next day. So make sure that you know, people have their malware, their anti-malware turned on and updated. That's a huge deal. Understand what it takes to be, you know, phishing attacks. Understanding the basic security tenets of information security for your organization is a big deal. If that requires hiring a consultant, to consider it risk management.
Mm.
You know, you get what you pay for, and when you don't pay for anything, you really have no defenses.
He is a director for the Institute of Homeland Security, Cybercrime, and International Crime Justice Studies at Tarleton State University. That's in Fort Worth, Texas. And we see a demand in people to combat ransomware, these coordinated cyber attacks. We'll continue our conversation with Dr. Chris Copeland next on Overnight America KMOX. In states like New York, Louisiana, Maryland, Florida, Texas, all over the country, we've seen state and local agencies attacked with ransomware. And these things are criminals going onto these computer networks and these individual computers. They're locking up different individual files or the entire computer, and they'll say you have to pay a ransom to get them back. Some pay, some don't. But it's a growing trend with people that are out there trying to scam you. Joining us now is Dr. Chris Copeland from Tarleton State University. If it was up to you and you're one of these Texas towns and you've been struck by this coordinated ransomware attack, do you pay the ransom or do you start from scratch if they haven't done any of those things that you've just recommended?
Well, if they haven't done any of the things recommended, it's probably they're going to have to start from scratch. Mm-hmm. Because, again, there's no guarantee that paying the ransom is going to fix it. And many small towns don't have the ransom required.
Yeah.
So, you know, large, you know, I'm going to pick on some cities here. A large city like Austin, Dallas, Fort Worth, or Houston, they have infrastructure in place. They have monies in place. They have even to some degree insurance for data loss.
Oh, wow. Right?
But you come down to a city. I live in a small town just outside of Fort Worth, a city called Joshua, 6,500 people. They do not have the same resources as a Fort Worth or a Dallas or an Austin. So, you know, fortunately they have me, and I'm willing to step in and help at any point in time. But, you know, not every city has somebody who is a cybersecurity person.
Mm-hmm.
So it the resources are going to dictate what they do, right? Even if they could you know, get their files unlocked, it doesn't mean they have the money to pay the ransom.
Yeah.
It also doesn't mean that they will get their files unlocked in the first place. Fortunately, in the state of Texas, there are the Texas Emergency Management System is activated by the governor, and that corresponds with a number of universities, the Texas A&M system being one of them, of which Tarleton's a member. And we go through and we try to help those cities out in recovering that data and coming up with decent plans. But it's very reactive.
Yeah.
And, you know, you don't put a plan into motion until you've been hit one time.
Yep. So let's say you get hit with one of these. What's normally the amount of money they would ask in order to unlock your files? Now, obviously, we don't know if they're actually going to follow through and do it. They just might take your money and run. They're not ethical by any means. But what would the financially, what would they normally ask for?
So they usually ask for things in Bitcoin or some other type of cryptocurrency. And it can range anywhere from half a Bitcoin, which I think currently Bitcoin is a little over $3,000.
Oh, really? Coin. It's that low right now?
So, well, yeah, it has dropped significantly. Yeah. But I don't know what the current rate is. But anywhere from half a Bitcoin to five Bitcoin,
yeah,
depending on the type of ransomware and who's executing it. So, you know, there's a number of different ways to handle that, but it all comes down to the money involved, and that's going to depend on the person who is, you know, executing the ransom.
Yeah, so you could be looking at a couple of $1,000. They pretty much have a price point where they feel people would say, it's not really worth our effort, it's worth the gamble, well, just paying them off and hope that we get it back.
Yeah, to reemphasize, that's usually per computer.
Oh, really?
So, okay. Yeah, I think that probably makes a lot more sense to the audience, understanding that it's per computer basis.
Not network.
So yeah. Let's say it's a city with five computers, anywhere from $5,000 to, you know, $35,000.
Oh, man.
If it's a city the size of Baltimore, which was one of the cities hit on the East Coast, then you're talking about hundreds of computers and hundreds of thousands of dollars. So, you know, at that point, what is the city more likely to do in terms of risk management and getting back into operations?
Wow.
That's a much bigger deal.
They're not necessarily looking for an individual vulnerability in these computers. They're just fishing out there and hoping that whatever they're throwing out, this malware, sticks to something. And then eventually it comes back to them that they found an infected computer, the malware did its thing, and then they're just crossing their fingers hoping that someone pays the ransom. Is that pretty much how it works?
So it depends on the type of attack. Most of the time, that's exactly how ransomware works. In the recent attacks in Texas, they were looking for a very specific vulnerability, which is why they were able to hit so many cities simultaneously. Mm-hmm. And that's because sometimes there are vendors that operate software that multiple cities purchase. Whether or not it's a Microsoft SQL Server or, you know, somebody's running something from a specific vendor like Adobe, they're looking for some sort of software execution that will bypass the current security of that system and install the ransomware.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, it just propagates on the network.
Yeah.
But once one computer has it, then it can very easily propagate across to others.
Yeah. You know, the thing with trying to make sure your computers are secure, we see a lot of people that ignore the warning signs, or they'll just think it'll never happen to them on a personal level. It's not just cities or companies. You know, individuals with just one home computer can get hit with one of these too. It's more than just the business side.
Well, and the personal people, the ones with personal computers, are more likely to be hit because there are simply far more people on the internet than there are organizations and cities and things of that nature. It's the nickel and dime approach that actually gets ransomware spammers their most money.
Yeah.
Getting you know, a city or something like that is very public, it's very newsworthy, but the day-to-day operations are the mom and pops and the grandmas and the children who all install something without truly knowing what it is and get infected with ransomware.
Yeah. All right, so let's say someone has a warning light that's going off, a red flag in the back of their mind, and they're thinking to themselves, oh boy, I don't want that to happen to me. What would you recommend they do first, and what kind of information should they reach out and try to find?
So in order to prevent, right, the best ways to reduce the risk of prevention is, you know, make sure your system updates are patched. If Microsoft or Apple comes out with a new system update, or, you know, somebody comes out with a new system update for your particular type of Android phone, run the updates. You know, don't hold off on them. The second thing is get anti-malware, get antivirus going, and make sure that you keep it up to date. Third thing is change passwords on a regular basis, because a lot of these things are looking for passwords. They're not just stealing your data, but they're looking for your credit card information, and they're looking for usernames, passwords, they're looking for all that kind of stuff when they do take over your computer. So reduce your risk by those three things. The standard tenets of security will always apply to ransomware.
Mm-hmm.
System updates, anti-malware, and then changing passwords on a regular basis.
Yep. I see this all the time. You go to your start bar, and there's that little yellow shield that says, oh, you got an update ready to install. Or you're on your computer, and the thing pops up, and you press, remind me later. And the next thing you know, you're reminding yourself for a week. or longer. And that's where a lot of problems could happen. You just forget to do these sort of things. And yeah, I know. It's super annoying. It feels like any time I'm ever by a computer and I'm like I have my laptop and I just want to leave, I want to pack up and go, then it decides to update and I'm sitting there for 5 minutes while it's trying to update itself. Super annoying. But I guess it's better than the alternative.
5 minutes is the 5 minutes that you spend waiting on it is highly annoying, but a far less cry of frustration than the 5 to 10 hours it takes to restore a system.
Yeah. Well, if you were to find one of these people that are actually perpetrating these ransomware attacks, would you like to get them alone in a room for 5 minutes, no cameras, and beat up on them? Because they're pretty the lowest of low, the ones that are doing these things.
Well, the ones I think are probably the lowest of the low are the ones who target extremely vulnerable groups like the elderly. Mm-hmm. Our senior citizens, and this is who I usually give my free speech talks to in my community, is the people who are retired, who don't know as much about information technology. I go and I talk to them and I give them, you know, basics, and we come back and we do refreshers and they come back and they ask questions. Yeah. Those are the ones that I feel probably get victimized the most because they had the most to lose.
Yeah.
But no, I really wouldn't. I'm not a very violent person. But at the same time, I would love to get them in alone in the room with an FBI agent.
Oh, okay.
And,
that'd be fine.
You know, that we can do.
Yeah, that you can't if you're lucky to. Well, I don't know. Do any of these ransomware people ever get taken by the FBI? Are they ever caught?
Yes. They are caught on a somewhat consistent basis. The problem is the number of people who are, you know, committing these crimes and the countries in which they commit them.
Yeah.
Some have extradition treaties. Some do not. But the FBI and actually the U.S. Secret Service are both extremely diligent in terms of finding out how these command and control systems work, operating off of them, finding out where they're located, and shutting down access to them. Sometimes they even seize the servers themselves.
Perfect.
So, yeah, they are good, but it is a very reactionary thing. And it's a cat-and-mouse game. For every server that the FBI or Secret Service can take down, 4 more will pop up somewhere in the world.
Yeah. Dr. Chris Copeland with Tarleton State University in Fort Worth. Let's say someone wanted to reach out to you or contact you. Where should they look?
They should just come directly to the Tarleton webpage. From there, you can find the Criminology and Criminal Justice Program. My beautiful, shiny, bald, and bearded mug will be right there on the screen. You can contact me there at ccopeland@tarleton.edu, or feel free to give me a call.
Perfect. Dr. Chris Copeland, appreciate the time. Thank you so much for coming on to Overnight America.
Hey, thanks for having me.
One of my favorite parts of the week about to happen right after the CBS News. We'll connect with The Late Shift and host Drex, connecting all of North America together, Canada and the United States together like peanut butter and jelly. It's Overnight America. KMOX.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.